Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to All Exits Closed. My guest today is my friend Steve Greenfield, and Steve is going to talk about the press coverage in the mainstream media on the presidential primaries. So, Steve, wouldn't you agree that it's been pretty terrible?
Yes, I would. Terrible. It's an utter disservice to the democratic process. The entire reason that the First Amendment was created in the first place, right, was to create the probability that the voting public would be able to receive and exchange information about, you know, about candidates and about government operations that weren't coming from a central government source interested in its own preservation, so that there would be independent sources of information so that we could make our own self-governing decisions. It's important to remember back at the time that the Constitution was adopted that most people didn't have the right to vote. And especially in the presidential election, pretty much nobody had the right to vote because the Electoral College originally was actual people who were electing presidents. And not the people that went to vote. And the Senate was also elected by state legislatures, not by the general public back at that time. And so it was especially critical. And the whole point, you know, when you read the Federalist Papers, the whole point behind the freedom of the press component of the First Amendment was to assure that the government and people in government could not be self-preserving in their positions, because there would be independent sources of information for voters. And of course, whether or not that's going to be useful depends on what kind of information the voters are going to be getting from the press. And that's sort of like the conundrum of freedom of the press. In a capitalist society, right, the role of a newspaper, just like the role of anyone else that has a product to sell, is to sell as much of their product as they can. You know, if people want cars that, you know, that have certain features, or let's use another example that's right in my own house. If people want an electric dryer inside their dishwasher to dry the dishes, even though that serves practically no function and just wastes a tremendous amount of energy because your dishes are going to drip dry in 10 minutes anyway, then they're going to put that thing on it and you're going to have it and electricity is going to be wasted. It's because they're interested in selling washers, not because, you know, of any other reason. And in the press, it works the same exact way. If a particular form of coverage is getting a lot of high ratings, that raises their advertising rates, then that's the kind of coverage they're going to provide. They're not necessarily going to provide the kind of information you need to be an informed voter. And yet you can't just have the alternative, right, which is a state supplied media, because then you have to be concerned that the people responsible for operating that media are concerned with preservation, and you might not be getting complete investigatorian. So the truth is there's no perfect solution for how to get information to people, but certainly at this stage, the ratings-driven media has completely failed its First Amendment obligation and the whole reason why there's a First Amendment protection in the first place.
Now, I remember back when Trump was running, and even before, when he was flirting with the idea of running for government, for governor of the state of New York, you know, people would cover him and he would say outlandish things. And I would think, if you wanted him to go away, just stop covering him. So the thing is, you know, he boosted ratings, and that's why all of the media outlets covered him. You know, it's a question of ratings as far as the mainstream media is concerned. Would you agree?
Right. Yes. Now, I remember back during the campaign, back in 2016, it's kind of fascinating because, you know, I don't have cable TV at home, but there is CNN is always on at the gym where I go to get my exercise most days. And I would stand there watching in fascination that they actually had nothing happening, sometimes for hours on end, where they just had a camera set up in front of an empty podium. I don't know if you remember that Donald Trump was very frequently very late for many of the appearances he said he'd be making. That had to have been by design, because what ended up happening is that all the news stations would drop their other coverage while they were waiting for him to come out on stage. And you would see they're looking at an empty podium with a bunch of flags behind it, and they'd be cutting back and forth between various, you know, on-air people that CNN had. And all the other networks were doing the exact same thing, you know, talking to each other and periodically interrupting each other to say, oh, well, we hear that Donald Trump will be appearing momentarily. And I would sit there with fascination going, where's the news? How about you just turn off that screen and cover some news? And if he comes walking out, you can quickly hit the button in the director's booth and punch back to the screen. Like, once he shows up, why are you focusing your camera on an empty podium and sitting that way for an hour doing nothing, you know? And so, yes, that is, you know, he was outlandish. Everybody wanted to know what kind of crazy thing is he going to say next. And as a result of that, you know, he got many, many multiples the coverage of any other candidate. And, you know, think about it. If you're covering Jeb Bush, and Jeb Bush is about to issue a policy address on, I don't know, let's just say the limits of the application of force at an extension of application of force at distant locations, and he's delivering this policy address, and then you have another guy who's going to come down an escalator and start talking about rapists and murderers, and say outrageous racist things, and then everybody can sit around and talk about, oh, he said such outrageous racist things, let's all register our outrage and acknowledge. Well, you know what, you put him on television, right? It's like Survivor, who's going to be voted off the island. Everyone has to do something outlandish and crazy. And so, yes, he got unbelievable free coverage, and you know that process is continuing right now, despite the media acknowledgement of their quote unquote culpability for having done all that, because they can't go back to their investors and their board of directors and say, we're deliberately here in our news division, we're deliberately going to cover lower rated elements of elections, and we're all going to be losing a tremendous amount of money between now and November of 2016. I mean, think about that. This election, 2020, this election is still, you know, a year and 3 months away. How could the news divisions tell their boards of directors that are responsible for the, you know, the shareholder value and the stock dividends and the profits of their companies that they've decided to abandon for the next 15 months? They'd all lose their jobs. They're not going to abandon ratings for the next 15 months. And so, you know, really what's important right now, because, you know, we know who the Republic nominee is going to be, right? But we don't know who the Democrat nominee is going to be. And that sort of brings us to where the press is now and what the press is doing and what the Democratic National Committee is doing in tandem with the press. In that the Democrats are only admitting people to their debates if those Democrats can meet a certain threshold of the kind of ratings that they can provide to the broadcasts. They're not having any other factors incorporated into their credibility or viability as candidates, other than this preposterous $1 donation system that they've assigned to everybody. That they think is, you know, an amount of money, a dollar. A dollar is an amount of money that anybody can afford to give. And so what they're really looking to do is have each candidate prove that they have high ratings, that they have high numbers. They're not trying to get them to prove that they have a lot of money, right? Because they're only looking for $1 per donor. They're trying to get them to prove that they get high ratings. And they're trying to get them to prove that they get high ratings because they're going to put them on a television show. The debate is a television show, which now has commercials, right? They, in order to get on the air, they have to provide to the network that's going to broadcast it that this particular set of people that are going to be on the debate can be expected to get the following ratings, and so therefore you will make the following amount of money. It's like the way the NFL sells the Super Bowl to networks, like gets networks to bid on the Super Bowl. They say, look, here's how many people watch the Super Bowl, and whichever network bids the highest amount of money, that's who the NFL gives the Super Bowl broadcast rights to. And what we're seeing the Democratic Party do right now is basically acknowledging that the press can be presumed to fail at its mission of providing information, and so therefore we're selling the rights to the broadcast on a ratings basis from one network to the next, and whoever takes out commercial advertisements on that network. I mean, my God, they're talking about ideas that are going to affect the course of world history. And they actually say every 10 minutes, okay, we're going to take a break for some words from our sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
And the sponsors are only there because the owners of the broadcast, which is the Democratic National Committee, has guaranteed that anybody who has low ratings is not going to be on the stage. You know, and so, go ahead.
Go ahead.
So what ends up happening is, now let's talk about the nature of the coverage of the election itself, which is that nobody in the press is actually interpreting the policy proposals and platforms of the different candidates to the voters. All they're talking about is, you know, who got the best zinger in, or who got the most fundraising bump the next day, which I guess is tied into who got the best zinger and who's been getting the most talk and the most the highest ratings and the most retweets and the most social media buzz, the most hashtags on Twitter relating to some remark that they managed to get in. And so you're looking at candidates, you could see it on the stage, right? They're all preparing to get in a zinger. It's always written down. It's not like something they got in off the top of their head. In the early ones, we saw a couple of people that decided they were going to open up by speaking Spanish. And then everybody for days was talking about, wow, spoke Spanish on stage. We don't know what he said. We don't care what he said. We just care that he spoke Spanish while on stage. And then for the next couple of days, you know, Beto O'Rourke is trending. And if he's trending, then he's going to get more $1 donations and he's going to be able to come back to the next debate. And nobody's, you know, when Kamala Harris made some remark that supposedly was a good zinger against Joe Biden, we heard about that for 2 weeks straight, but we never heard a word about whether her rent subsidy proposal will actually do anything for poverty or if it's just a landlord subsidy, right? That's the thing we need to know. She went on stage to talk about, you know, I'm going to create a subsidy for people who are paying more than 30% of their income in rent. And in reality, and that's a topic for a different show, okay? In reality, Kamala Harris's rent subsidy proposal is actually a subsidy to landlords that's only going to put upward pressure on the rent that they charge. And it's not an anti-poverty program whatsoever, but I defy you to find me a single reporter who was covering the debate in which she presented her proposal that delved into, you know, what this proposal was about and whether it would work. Now, someone's running for president, and they say, I'm going to do this with my policy. Joe Biden, he put out a climate change proposal, right? Everyone, the press was touting here. He finally released his climate change proposal, right? No commentary by the press that his climate change – there was some talk. By the way, there was some talk, you might remember, because he's had this tendency in the past, that they found that a couple of complete – phrases and sentences seems to have been lifted from other people's websites. So he was briefly the old accusation of Biden has a tendency to plagiarize or not give credit when he's using certain phrases to the sources that created those phrases. And so that was temporarily a tempest in a teapot because, oh, Joe Biden plagiarized. Not a single reporter commented that the phrases in question were taken from coal lobby websites. That's the part that we needed to know about, right? Not not this gossip. Oh, Joe Biden, he's a habitual plagiarizer. He was releasing a climate change document, and nobody in the press was discussing the fact that the plagiarized phrases came from the coal industry and was therefore should be considered not as plagiarism, but as not as credible information pertaining to climate change, because the coal industry's job is to make sure we keep burning coal. And obviously we can't do anything about climate change based on advice from the coal industry, but no reporters covered where the plagiarism came from. They only covered the gossip that he did it, you know, because gossip about personalities gets ratings, and an analysis of, you know, why candidates in 2019 are still taking, you know, the clean coal lobby information, you know, like this was omitted from the coverage in its entirety. So we don't get to know. The press doesn't tell us what we need to know. All we hear about is ratings. Which candidate got a bump? Who's polling? Who's getting more chat? And so what ends up happening is that the coverage we're receiving is people in the media talking about other people talking about candidates as people, and we're getting nothing about what they would do if they were president and whether or not the things they say they would do have functional math behind them, or any other any other quality that would make it a functional policy. People have been running for months and months and months, and we still haven't got the slightest idea of anything we would need to know to decide if we want them to be president. The exception, of course, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, right? They talk very clearly about policies that will actually work, except since the press isn't covering the element of will the policies actually work, so far, at least from a public information perspective, it doesn't matter that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are proposing policies that can actually work and that others are proposing, you know, policies that won't work, because we as the public are not being told by any analysts in the media which ones might work and which ones won't. So like, if okay. I tell you Bernie, those proposals will work, you just have to take my word for it, because no one's giving you any explanation.
Okay, two questions. In 1987, going into the 88 election, Joe Biden was kicked out on his butt from the presidential race for plagiarizing. What makes these times different than before? Was the press more vigilant back then? Are they more lax right now? What do you think the problem is?
You know, that problem isn't really new. The press and the people behind the commerce that the press engages in have really always played favorites. You know, I'll give you a perfect example. We can go back 8 years earlier. During the 1980 campaign, during one of the debates, Ronald Reagan said that if he were president, that he would solve the black youth unemployment problem by creating a lower minimum wage for black youth and thereby incentivizing business to hire black youth. And that was most likely the most racist and most outrageous thing ever said in a presidential debate, you know, in anybody's memory. Because back then, you know, minimum wage was, you know, $2.25 an hour. And he was proposing that black unemployment could be solved by paying them less, you know, like a below a starvation wage. Because they're black, like to actually create a racial division that black people would get paid less than young white people, and have that be law, have that be minimum wage law, you know, and that the press should have exploded, you know, with that. You might recall just 4 years earlier when Jimmy Carter was debating Gerald Ford, and Gerald Ford was the appointed president at that point. Ford made a mistake in about a question about Soviet domination of Eastern Europe and said that Eastern Europe was not under the domination of Russia, of the Soviet Union. And the press went absolutely berserk because, like, how can anybody be trusted to be the president of the United States if he doesn't know something basic that, like, Eastern Europe is under the domination of the Soviet Union? But four years later, we had a president who actually was proposing that United States law provide a lower minimum wage for black people than for white people, and the press said nothing. Why? Because they wanted Ronald Reagan to be president. Right, that was the issue there, and then there was the Gary Hart matter, right? When he was supposedly cheating on his wife with Donna Rice on a boat in Florida, right. And you know, it turns out now, all these years later, we know that wasn't actually what was happening. They just posed for a picture, and it was we know that when Howard Dean was shot down out of the primaries because people said he screamed too loud. When he was happy about winning a primary or coming in second in a primary, and when he came to the podium, he led this loud cheer. And then it turns out that the media had edited the audio so that what was really happening was that the crowd in the room was screaming, and he came up and sort of like screamed with them to get caught up in that moment, except they used audio editing technology to lower the volume of the audience that he had come in to cheer with, and it sounded like a nut standing at a podium in a quiet room that just started screaming at the top of his lungs, right? I don't really know. I'm just a civilian here. I don't know how the press decides what's outrageous and what's, you know. So in 1988, for whatever reason, I guess they wanted to destroy Joe Biden, and so they did, and, you know, they had a means by which to do it. But the press has always had some system that they agree upon among each other, raises the question of whether the press is actually competitive or whether they get together and make shared decisions like so many other businesses do, that you know, superficially pretend to be in competition with each other but aren't. So I, you know, yes, the situation basically is that they didn't want him to be a contender in 1988, but they do want him to be a contender now. And as far as I'm concerned, the reason they want him to be a contender now is not because they want him to be president, but because they want Donald Trump to be president. Joe Biden can't beat Donald Trump. Two, three days ago, there was massive reporting that Joe Biden had asked an audience he was speaking to speculate about what might have happened to this country had Barack Obama been assassinated once it became clear that he had the majority of the convention votes late in the 2008 primaries. And so I guess that's a good eyeball grabber, right? Oh my God, Joe Biden has asked people to speculate about what might have happened to America had Barack Obama been assassinated. First of all, like, what's wrong with that? Like, what's wrong with asking that question, right? You get people thinking, you know, what if something like that had happened, right? Because, you know, people have been assassinated. Martin Luther King was assassinated. Bobby Kennedy was assassinated the night he won the California primary, right? That was the night it became apparent he might be the Democratic presidential nominee and he got assassinated. So from a musing standpoint, a historic standpoint, it's not in and of itself an outrageous thing to have asked his audience to speculate about, because he was trying to get them to think about how much better the country was that Obama was president. Now, I don't necessarily, you know, agree with him on that, but he's running for president on that particular audience memory, right? But the real issue, if you look at the entire quote where he made that remark to his audience, is that he was rambling. He couldn't put a coherent sentence together in the English language. He stopped every three words and was muttering and didn't get to the end of a single sentence until finally he got to the part, like, he was rambling, right? That's what I want to know as a voter, that we've got a guy who's, you know, elderly and seemingly losing capacity. I'm not going to play the ageism game, right? Because obviously, you see people like Bernie Sanders and other people. If you go out and see, you know, that people truly have their full capacity, right? People develop at different paces and people age at different paces. Joe Biden is clearly in a stage of diminished capacity right now. But the press doesn't want us talking about that, right? Because they want Donald Trump to continue being president. They want the Democrats to nominate either somebody, and they won't mind terribly much if Joe Biden becomes president, because as we've been discussing, the issue for corporate America and the donor class, the institutional donor class of this country, is that they don't want the boat rocked. They don't want anyone becoming president that's going to make actual structural change in how our economy works, the relationship between business and government. So they want to make sure that a Democrat who is going to make great changes, like a Franklin Roosevelt or, an Elizabeth Warren or a Bernie Sanders, doesn't become the nominee. They don't want to incur the risk that any of the proposals of these people could actually become law in this country. So they'd be okay if Joe Biden became president, but they'd also be okay if Joe Biden doesn't become president. People interpret a statement I use all the time, that the Democrats' top priority is not winning elections, to mean that I think they're deliberately throwing elections, and, as if that's some kind of conspiracy theory. And I explain over and over and over again that it's not their top priority doesn't mean that they're throwing elections. They do want to win. They're happy when they win. They just put an enormous condition on the winning, which is that it has to be somebody who won't be proposing any kind of structural changes to the system. They will not provide a nominee who is proposing structural changes to the system. And so when they win, they're happy. But if they won with, say, a Bernie Sanders, they wouldn't be happy. They wouldn't be happy that had happened. And that's why they do everything they can to prevent a Bernie Sanders or Tulsi Gabbard or an Elizabeth Warren from becoming the nominee. They're not specifically throwing the election. They're just saying we're only willing to win under the following conditions. And they maintain those conditions. As we can see, they maintain those conditions election cycle after election cycle, and they're doing that right now, and the press is allowing them to do that. The press is partnering with them, because for the first time in history, the Democratic National Committee has told the press, I guess based on seeing what happened with the press giving free coverage to Donald Trump in 2015 and 2016, they are telling the media, we are only providing you with ratings successful candidates. They have to prove their ratings or we won't let them on the stage. So that's where we are. It's just, it's all about gossip. It's all about ratings and stimulating public conversation, and absolutely nothing about what we need to know about electing a president.
Steve, this is a conversation that definitely will be continued. So you have been listening to All Exits Closed with Steve Greenfield. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and if you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Thanks, Steve, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you.